Welcome one, welcome all to episode 219 of the Xbox Expansion Pass, recorded on March 16th, 2024. I'm your host, Luke. Oh, wait, not Luke Lore, the insipid ghost. This is Captain Logan, but I am still with the Luke Lore insipid ghost. I am joined today by him because he is feeling a little down in the weather. The allergies have really gotten to him. I don't know what allergies are, so I'm still confused in learning about this. It's a growing experience for myself, but I will be trying to do my best to give you what he would give you if this were just a normal episode. So in this week, we're going to be talking or taking the time in a quiet week of news to reflect on some of the new recent releases that have arrived to mixed reviews. Xbox exclusive Pal World is open to investment, and we tackle listener questions. Please enjoy.
I got you on that one.
Yeah, you really did. Luke, we like to start the show with words of kindness. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to see how you're doing. How are you holding out there, buddy?
Greetings from the land of pollen. I think this pollen allergy thing has gotten me to an actual sickness.
It's
kind of a bummer, but I'm drinking my tea. My wife, she's replacing me as her date. We're supposed to go see Wanda Sykes tomorrow. She's replacing me. On the date, she already said, she's like, you're too sick to leave the house. I was like, okay.
Oh, all right, man.
So here that's I am. Bummer. Yeah, you know, I'm getting some good rest. Could be worse.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you're playing some stuff, so I know you can't be too terribly upset.
Yeah, the thing that came in was a nice consolation prize. If you got to be down and out sick, at least you get to play something new. So that was
fun.
We'll talk about that next week for sure.
Well, I wanted to kind of kick things off here. We've got an interesting week worth of news. And one of the things that I thought was welcome, but a very odd thing to find ourselves talking about was photo mode. Because I don't know about you, but I tend to like photo mode. I like to use it on a regular basis, depending on how gorgeous the game is. And if it doesn't have one, it feels like a quite the miss. But it tends to be kind of an assumed thing, especially over on like PlayStation single player games. But given that a lot of what we play is multiplayer, I was very surprised to hear that Senua Saga Hellblade 2 is going to have a photo mode. So Ninja Theory set out some screenshots using photo mode on socials, and they're really impressive. I thought these were really beautiful. I can't wait to see, like, I really do need to go back and like finish up that first game, because this Hellblade 2 is just going to be absolutely beautiful. And I'm very, very curious to see, like, if I can actually connect with it the way I started to when I first kind of kicked things off. But I wanted to kind of toss it to you and see, are you like a big photo mode guy? Do you love like kind of sitting there and like working with the different angles and in the vinaigrette and, you know, trying to find like that perfect angle for or composition for a shot?
No, I like other people's creations with photo mode. Like, that's kind of my favorite thing, is to see what other people can create with a more artistic mind or a better eye for it.
Yeah.
I really do think photo mode is dope. I love when games have it. I've been surprised by any number of different like images that I'll show up on my social timelines, and I'm like, this is photo mode in Spider-Man or whatnot. One of the games that's coming out soon has a photo mode, and I'm anxious to see what people put together for that. The ones that Ninja Theory put out for Hellblade 2 were just mind-boggling. Anybody that hasn't seen them, I encourage you to go find them and look at the eyes, because the eyes are just incredible. I mean, it looks like they're real. They don't, it not even Uncanny Valley, just real, which is really impressive. I'm anxious to see more about this game, because I'm starting to get this creeping suspicion, and I don't know that I'm right. I don't think I'm right even, but I have this thing in the back of my mind where I worry this might be an Order 1886 situation.
How so?
Where we wait forever for this game that's supposed to be a pillar of a console, mm-hmm. You know, like the Series X was showcased with Hellblade first. Yeah. Order 1886 was this big visual showcase for the PS4, but there wasn't a lot of game in 1886. And we already know that Hellblade 2 is short. We know it doesn't have a physical edition. They've shown limited gameplay and action. And I know it's going to have more action than the first, but I kind of have that fear in the back of my mind until we keep seeing more just action. But maybe that's not what this game is, right? Like maybe it's not supposed to be that, and maybe we're putting undue pressure on it. But I will say the screenshots that are put out have been incredible. The audio design always looks incredible. I'm really excited for Hellblade 2, but I have that suspicion somewhere in there, and I don't know that I think it's going to happen, but it's in my mind.
I could see that. I kind of assumed that this, similar to what I've played through the first one, is going to be like a third person action adventure game. But realistically, like this is going to be a visual novel. Like it's going to feel more like in What Remains of Edith Finch to me, but with actual like combat and just like injected into it. So I wasn't really like I'm most definitely not expecting like a God of War. I think that it would be served better to kind of like prop this up as like this is going to be a story told that will involve combat, but not to expect it to be like I'm going to have combat moves and open up new abilities and. Mm-hmm. I'm not expecting that at all. So maybe that's my naivety with the first one, but that's just kind of the vibe that I'm getting.
I think we're just so desperate for that on Xbox as an exclusive. Like we want that as an exclusive so badly, that God of War-esque game. And the reality is that's just not what Xbox does. I mean, Halo Infinite's now in a pretty great place. I know we'll talk about that later on, but it's just not what Xbox seems to want to do. You look at Avowed, you look at Fable, you look at a lot of this. It just doesn't seem like they want to make God of War-esque style games. And not for nothing, like maybe that's okay, given that we're kind of getting sequelitis over on the PlayStation, you know, that now we're all really excited about Helldivers on the PlayStation side. And that's not even close to God of War, save for third person. So maybe that's a good thing. But I do think Ninja Theory does have something special. I'm very curious to see if Hellblade 2 goes to PlayStation after a year or something like that.
Me too. I would be very surprised if it didn't at this point, given the trajectory of what games are going to be going over there. And I think I'd be curious to kind of get your thoughts on this later on, because I think there's more to talk about as far as like the expectation. But I think if you know, if we look at like things like Sea of Thieves, wow, I'm just blanking on what it's called, Hi-Fi Rush and
Hi-Fi Rush.
Yep. Things like that, like the reception that we've seen for those, I think it's very clear that something like a Hellblade would be well suited for a PlayStation audience, and I think they'd really enjoy it.
Yeah, no, I have a couple things to say on that when we get to it for sure, because I have a sneaking suspicion that we're all not going to care in a generation or so.
Yeah, you know what I do care about?
What's that?
Patrons.
They're pretty great. They have kept us propped up this year.
I care a lot about patrons. And this week, we like to shout them out, our tier twos and tier threes. Remember, you can head over to patreon.com/Xbox Expansion Pass to make sure that if you want to support this content, to help buy Luke some cough medicine, some allergy medication, so that he doesn't keep sounding like Geralt from Rivia from Witcher, just like every episode. I'm trying to prop you up here, buddy. I'm trying to make you feel like you're having
a good time. They're both for monsters.
If you want to help Luke, all of the stuff that we get from the Patreon goes towards investing back into the show. It means a lot to us. And the bonus is you get a really awesome Discord community. If you're big into Discord and you like to have conversations with people who are just down to earth, salt of the earth, genuinely fun gamers who have a real nice outlook on games that are coming or things in the industry, I would say that our community over at the Discord for the patrons is top notch. Probably some of the most cream of the crop opinions come from there, and it's just nice to have it in our own little siloed experience. So Did you want to say anything on that? Or
I just that siloed experience is great, given that all the social places seem to be so dominated by anger and frustration and finger pointing and debates about, you know, somebody ruining a game because a character is a person of color. Or it's just so exhausting on socials that going to our Discord and celebrating games nonstop is a blast.
Yeah, no kidding, Ran. I genuinely spent like 10 minutes the other night trying to find something positive on Twitter and just kept scrolling and couldn't find anything positive. So finally I was like, screw it. I have a cat and ice cream and jazz music. I'm good.
There you go.
This is me trying to put some positivity out into the world. Right. But yeah, it's great to have that, especially. Yeah. Sea of Thieves just recently announced that they had one of the NPCs in the game transition. And lore wise, it makes sense. We have a pirate appearance potion in the game, so you can change your appearance. But we had an NPC recently transition from female presenting to male presenting. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of rejoice over that. And they actually like call it out in the game through the dialogue. And it's like, oh, that's nice. It's subtle. And a lot of people will know like who that character was. But now we know who that character is now. And to this day, see some people being like, why are you doing this? Like, why is it? Why you gotta? And it's like, maybe because representation is a positivity kind of thing. You know, maybe we have just more than like a couple things represented in games.
Well, you know, I like to be angry at things, Logan. And the moment I heard that Sea of Thieves was coming to PlayStation, it was a dead game. The moment I heard that Sea of Thieves had a character transition, dead game.
Oh my gosh.
Hi-Fi Rush and Pentiment, when they showed up on other platforms, Xbox died.
Man.
I know we're still doing this show and still playing games on those systems and still playing those exact games pretty regularly, but still, you know, dead.
We got early access. We got really, really early access. Mm-hmm. It's a dang man. I didn't realize I was going to have like Twitter talking to me today.
Sorry, man.
This see, this is why we need cold medicine, because it helps Luke not feel angry. But I did want to call out again. Possibly. I did want to call out the tier twos and tier threes this week. So thank you to Chris 1H1D, Nicholas Johnson, Ellery Woods Parker III, Nicholas Downey, Rob Frawley II, Tao Zochi, Xbox Skittle, Matto 1606, Randall Thor 19, Silkenit, Rick Gaffney, African, aka Charles Jones, Game Positive, Jam Pack Sam, Matt Valdez, Neo Prime 33, Rick Davis, Red Beast, Xbox Mike 29, The Lord Sir Master James Suddy, Brendan Myers, aka The Winter Gamer, Sony's VP of Marketing, Kevin Butler, Clint Coombs, and DJ Hero, but also Dano12. Thank you all so much. I really appreciate your guys' love and support. I know Luke does too, but he's saving his voice for the actual topics that he knows he's going to have to try and share some thoughts on. Just to let you all know, too, a little bit of housekeeping, and I know everyone loves when people say a little bit of housekeeping on podcasts, but if you guys get a chance, there is a fantastic interview from Tales of Kinzara out over on the YouTube side, and I'm pretty sure it's out on audio as well, too. But if you guys get a chance, man, hearing from Abu talk about passionately about his game and stuff is really amazing. And I've been following his like Twitter feed over the last like week or two. And he is just making the rounds, man. He is doing the press tour. He's out there talking about this game. It's beautiful, man. You love to see someone so, so excited.
We were first.
Yeah, we were first. We were the first ones to get an interview. If you want the purest, non-refined, the rawest experience you could possibly get, if you like that kind of like bareback interview style, this is where you want to go. This is the kind of thing that you want to see, that kind of action happening on screen or in your ears. Yeah, that's what you get to hear. Also,
Logan, take the reins of the show. My voice is dying. Bareback.
Yep, that's what I didn't say. I didn't say it was going to be. I didn't say it was going to be clean. I just said it was going to be happening.
Sorry, Red Beast.
Yeah, don't. Yeah, sorry, kids. You'll learn about like cowboys and stuff later in life. Also, just to let you know too. I still. Oh, I don't actually have it. No, I. Oh, I don't. I don't have my merch with me. This feels weird. Luke, I don't like this. We have to stop the show. I don't have my merch with me right now.
Nah, you're okay. You're all right.
All right. It feels weird. I usually have like my wallet or my container. But when one's getting washed, I have my other container here, and I don't know where my wallet is. It's probably in my jeans. But we do have merch. So please make sure if you guys get a chance, head over to renworks.myspotify.com/collections to find the Xbox Expansion Pass merch. I actually love it more than most merch for stuff. Mm-hmm. So definitely cool. Getting
it's
a chance.
Unique stuff. It's unique.
Yeah. Stuff you is practical, well made, and not just like the, hey, we got a t-shirt. Look at our t-shirt. And oh yeah, we got a mug. Oh, who doesn't have like a billion mugs? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Also, I'm working on the review for the Turtle Beach Stealth Elite 2. I got the footage recorder for that. I'm still needing to get that pulled down and then spliced together. I need to record the script. So I'm hoping this week I will get that out for you so you guys have an idea. I have some really interesting thoughts about this controller because I think this controller, yeah, I'll save it for the review, but very interesting thoughts on that one. Pal World. Mm-hmm. Luke, you don't play Pal World.
I do not, but I know a lot of people in our Discord do, and a lot of certainly a lot of other people do.
You're not a Pal World person, but it's kind of surprising considering that there's 25 million people out there who are like, yeah, I like the Pal World.
25 million is insane. You look at like Helldivers, which is a hit. Pal World like triples that. It's wild.
Yeah. Which is wild because it's like you think about like all the different things that it's trying to do and how it's not really like a cohesive game. It's just like it's like having silly putty or like clay in of different colors, and you're just like mixing them and mashing them together, and eventually you're going to get this gray ball of clay, and you're just like, oh, that's what happens when you put all the colors together, it looks like this. Whereas you look at like Helldivers and you're like, oh no, that is a very put together game. Mm-hmm. From head to toe, like everything.
It's funny very too, well thought out. Because like Pal World is this mishmash of genre types and it works so well.
Yeah.
And then you look at a mishmash like Skull and Bones, which is a number of genre types, and it doesn't work, right? Like you've got the tree cutting thing from your boat, which is odd, some of the material stuff, and it just doesn't work. And it's funny how games can come together or really miss the mark on stuff like that. And because they're a small team, I think Pal World was able to. I think Pal World and Helldivers, both small teams, not a lot of bloat in their decision making. They were able to mishmash genre types, but hone the experience, I think.
Yeah, it's really interesting to kind of look and see, like, when you know you have a solid foundation for an idea and you work towards that goal and you don't feel like there's a whole lot of people pulling you in different directions. Because I think that might have been the burden of Skull and Bones. You know, they had the idea. The inception was pirate open world sailing game, and so much of like that game's development just felt like it kept getting drawn out or reiterated on, or they didn't quite know what they wanted to do. And over time, there's just so many people like, we need to get a battle pass in here. We need to get cosmetic transactions to purchase in here, you know, and stuff like that. And you can see how Pal World is just like, no, we just wanted to make a game. Mm-hmm. And Helldivers is like, well, we want to make a game, but somebody told us we had to do a battle pass. So we're going to stick one in, but we're going to scatter bits of premium currency around the game. So that if you want to get the premium stuff, like you do, but I honestly think that Helldivers 2 would be served better if it didn't have the battle pass system, if it just had a normal weapon and armor progression. Yeah, no, because I think that game, the grind that you have to get the medals to be able to get the like the different weapons and armor and stuff like that, the armors don't really impact the game too often. The weapons are really where it's at. And to force people down a battle pass system to really kind of dig those out, given how much grind there is and how easily some of the other stuff comes as far as like the ship modules and the stratagems, I think they would have been better off pricing this at $60 and ripping out the ripping out the battle pass system.
I like the war bond approach, and I will say, like, in its defense also, I like the the thing, like, Halo Infinite has this where your pass never expires.
Yeah,
I like that aspect of it, so I guess it doesn't bother me as much because of that reason.
Oh, it's definitely the lesser of two evils. Like, if you had to drink poison, there was two poisons on the table. One said lethal, one said, you know, bad Chinese food or something, or bad McDonald's food or something. You know, like, I would probably take the one that's going to give me, like, the runs for a week than, like, the one that's going to kill
me. Your analogies today.
Yeah, they're good, aren't they? I think they're spot on. Thanks again for, hey guys, allergy medication, Patreon. So I when I look at something like Palworld, and they're talking about, you know, the CEO of Pocket Pair, Takuro Mizobi, told Bloomberg that they want to, like, they're open to acquisition, that they're open to partnership through Microsoft, but Microsoft hasn't really approached them. Mm-hmm. And I think, if I'm being honest, I think that's a smart move by Xbox. Like, Phil Spencer and Matt Booty looking at this and being like, I could see this being very flash in the pan and not rushing to acquisition, I think is a real good measured step in their case. Like, they probably could, but they're making money regardless of the exclusivity. So they don't need to acquire them. And it's not like, you know, Pocket Pair doesn't have a ton of money to do whatever they want right now. So, you know, if they want to go off and do their own thing, that they're very free to do so. A lot of people were very concerned, yourself included, about Toys for Bob being let go from the acquisition for Activision Blizzard King. But if they're still partnering with Microsoft for their games, are Xbox users still winning in that case?
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a good point. I think if I'm Xbox, I would look at acquiring them, or at least locking down the IP. To do with what we will. Like, we know Xbox doesn't like to put live service games exclusive, which makes good sense, but controlling an IP is a very valuable thing, particularly one that in a very quick time has gotten 25 million players, which is just absurdly impressive. It was Todd Oxtra in our Discord who suggested that maybe rather than acquisition, they do investment. And PlayStation's done that a number of times with a number of different properties. Yeah. Investing in that IP makes good sense too. With acquisition, I wonder if they can't because of the FTC or lingering ABK elements, or maybe it's just not a wise legal move at this time.
Yeah.
The idea that Pocket Pair is open to it, but says they haven't been approached is fascinating because the price went up. You know what I mean? Like, the price went up when this game did so well. So I think there's a lot of factors to weigh in, but I like the idea of Xbox investing. I don't think we see a lot of that, or at least I don't know about a lot of it. Whereas I feel like every few months we're hearing about PlayStation investing in Epic Game Store and a number of other companies. It's a strain, you know, like, there's goods and bads in both.
Very much so. I think that the investment in Pocket Pair by Microsoft would be a very smart move, but I'm still kind of wondering where the tail end of that game is. Like, where does, because as far as I know, like, game's been doing great. I haven't really heard a whole lot about development on it in like the zeitgeist. A lot of folks have kind of stopped talking about it. Whereas with like Helldivers, you know, that being like a TikTok clippable game is fascinating. But at the end of the day, they are still really, like, they just released Mex. They're still having like new worlds open up. They're adding environmental elements. There's new types of enemies that they're teasing now. Mm-hmm. And the life of that game feels ever evolving. Mm-hmm. And they just released a new type of defense mode too, as well too. So it feels like they're actively working on that game. Whereas with Palworld, it feels like it came out. A lot of people found a lot of the enjoyment that they wanted from it. And 25 million users does not equal concurrency.
True.
And I think that concurrency, especially with games, and granted, you know, this is like a multiplayer game, should be something people are invested in. And it's just not something that I'm hearing about.
I wonder about the same, because those are logical points. I think about how little I hear about Destiny. If I ever hear about Destiny, it's negative, and yet people are really engaged for a long time. But like, one thing that's for sure is I can no longer trust my social feed to give me an accurate portrayal of what's going on. Like, over on Threads, I love gamer Threads. I really enjoy using Threads, but it doesn't have the audience or the user base that Twitter does. But Twitter has been corrupted and really messed up in terms of algorithms. In fact, it's, you know, as a content creator, it's horrible, right? Like, there's no use there. That's why we are so appreciative of like Discord and other places of people finding our content, because it just doesn't happen on social anymore. So I don't know that that's a fair barometer anymore. I don't know if it ever was either, but like, what I mean is, I used to get a feel for things. I don't get a feel for things. Only outrage comes on Twitter.
I find Twitter to be it is very much that, but I find, I think I get more of that through Twitch nowadays, to be honest. Like, I feel like Twitch is kind of where a lot of attention has shifted away from Twitter. Twitter feels very much like it's just turned into this real cesspool. And unfortunately, I think because of the acquisition by Elon Musk, and a lot of like his choices have soured soured the grapes. And it's just like, at that point, it's like, there's nothing, there's no clean, you're just going to have to toss out the whole thing at this point, which is kind of a shame. But yeah, trusting Twitter to be like a good zeitgeist when so many of the influential people in the industry who have helped kind of like craft the narrative around gaming have left. It leaves that void there, and you're kind of left wondering like, okay, what's the feel? What's the actual like temperature of this game?
Right. Regardless, whatever Pal World is doing, that team's got to be swimming in money, swimming in possibility, and that IP's got to be pretty strong. And like, look at the number of Pokemon spinoffs or mishmashes of genre in Pal World itself. Like, they could explore some of those pretty substantially in a great way. So I hope that IP continues to do well. I hope it's not a flash in the pan, because I like the idea of new ideas doing well. I like when I see Helldivers do well. I get sad when I see companies like WB do what they do to some of their IP. So I like new ideas. I want those to continue. So we'll, it's something to track for sure. Small teams, small budgets doing big things is pretty great, given how many times we see big budget titles just swing and miss.
It's true. I really like the fact that some of these, and on it, if it were up to me, man, if I was a Mizobi, I'd take that money, I'd distribute it amongst the small team that I've had, and be like, all right, you guys are good, retire, do whatever you want, but you don't have to. If you don't want to work anymore, then you're good. We got we got the money. Because I think that's what they wanted at the end of the day, right?
Yeah, probably. Probably.
Next on the docket, I wanted to bring this up because this is kind of a scary thing. Like, we were just kind of talking about Microsoft acquisitions and some of the things that we would want to see Microsoft do if possible. Embracer Group, the dirty word of the games industry right now, is selling off Saber Interactive, which really kind of infuriates me. Because they're the ones that are working on Space Marines 2 right now. And Space Marines just got Call of Duty skins, which I purchased. Much to my chagrin, I realized
Space Marine got it, or Call of Duty got Space Marine?
Oh, sorry. Call of Duty got Space Marine content. Warhammer 40K stuff. And it looks great. I mean, I really love my Sidewinder. It looks fantastic. I'm almost done with the event for it. But it is the thing I am doing while I wait for Space Marine 2. So this, unfortunately, this was an article that came to us from Windows Central. Thanks to Samuel Tolbert for writing this up. Embracer Group is selling developer and publisher Saber Interactive for a listed price of $247 million. An absolute drop in the bucket for Microsoft that I will comment on later. But the sale includes multiple subsidiaries as well, including New World Interactive, Nimble Giant, and Slipgate, which honestly, like, New World has a new content drop coming, I think, or they just had a content drop. I just reinstalled it. And then Slipgate is the portal Halo that no one realized they wanted until we didn't have Halo for a long time. And we needed like a nice injection of Halo into our life. So Slipgate was fantastic for that. But the sale also grants Saber Interactive the option to bring the Metro developer 4A Games and Pinball FX Studio Zen Studios, which Zen Studios is still like one of my favorite interviews of yours. Fantastic developer who manages to get like some of the coolest IPs for their pinball boards.
Yeah.
Which is just, it's absolutely amazing. Like seeing some of the IP come through on there. I still think I still have my little switch thing where I can like turn the switch and slip it into a little dock in Tate mode somewhere around here. But yeah, that's a fantastic studio. But according to emails seen by Bloomberg, Saber Interactive has already decided to bring 4A Games and Zen Studio. So I'm hoping that that's the case, because if they do, then whoever helps kind of pick up Saber Interactive, which is, you know, that's a good get right there. That's like, you know, Warner Brothers looking to sell Rocksteady and WB Games and stuff. It's like that would be a really smart investment, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. But I hate Embracer Group for doing this, because it throws Saber Interactive into the how do we handle this situation at a time when they should just be able to focus on games. Like that was the whole point of Embracer Group, was to allow studios just to make games.
It's very frustrating to watch, because we had all these cautionary tales about Microsoft acquisitions and you know what damage it could do to the gaming industry. Meanwhile, Embracer is destroying studios left and right, gobbling up IP and then mismanaging and doing poor things with them. At least with Toys for Bob, we were able to realize like, oh, the studio wanted this. At least with Microsoft, we were able to see they are voluntarily supporting the unions. They're not God's gift to gaming, Microsoft, but like it seems like they're handling their acquisitions with far more respect to the developers than not. I mean, everybody's had layoffs and it's been brutal, but something about it in hindsight feels like, it feels like Microsoft's handling it far better than some of these other companies, and Embracer has just destroyed it. I do think Saber has a good opportunity, given that they're getting the Metro developers, given that they're getting Zen Studios. I think 3-4 big things is staying with Embracer. They're the ones that made those really good racing games, Redout.
I love the Redout series too.
Same. And you know, I really hope that Saber's okay. I hope that they're able to keep making stuff, because in large part I've enjoyed Saber's work.
Yeah. Didn't they do the Turok remakes in the Witcher port?
I'm thinking, I can't remember for sure. I know Space Marine's like their big eye thing here.
I know they did the Witcher port, which the Witcher port to Switch is like it's black magic, let's be honest. There's some things that probably had to have been murdered ritualistically to be able to get that game to run on Switch. I don't know how, but I'm sure that there's probably a paper trail.
Switch running anything these days is surprising to me. Like, I don't even mean that as a diss. It's shocking to me what some of these develop. They do magic, right?
Yeah.
You said last week that some studios, they it's not that you can't do it, it's that you're a bad developer. And I was like, at what some of these studios can do, it's just it's insanity how talented they are. Just talented, and like, there is some truth to the way you're saying it. Absolutely. You know, like Battlefront Collection, 64 gigs. Like, are you kidding me? The PS2 games. Like, what are you doing, Aspyr? Like, some developers are not talented enough for the projects that their leadership puts on them. And some are incredibly talented and mismanaged. And both are failures on the gamer side. And they only damage the properties and the people involved.
Yeah, I constantly think about that announcement of Stargate and Knights of the Old Republic, and how I was like, that's not going to be a thing that happens.
Stargate. Did you mean Star Wars?
What did it? Oh,
you said Stargate.
That's funny. I don't even know where Stargate came from. But yeah, the Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic. I'm glad I said Knights of the Old Republic, because otherwise that would have been like a really weird reference. Like
we're getting a new game.
We're getting it. Yeah. Oh, Stargate. Okay. Yeah, the whole Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic announcement was one of those ones where I was like kind of eye rolling, like, okay, sure. All right. Sure. You put out a flashy trailer and everyone's going to get super hyped because nostalgia, but I guarantee you that's not going to be a game. Mm-hmm. So
it stinks to look at Aspyr. I know that's our next news story, but like there's no confidence that can come with that name anymore. Like they did some good stuff. They had some good ports, but there's no way to feel confident about their work. And it's the question becomes, are you not talented enough, or did you not have the time? Were you rushed? Were you pushed into a project that should not have happened? Because we know the Battlefront games, they run immaculately in Xbox back compat. Like the only thing they do that this collection does that the Xbox back compat doesn't do is the multiplayer server. And that doesn't even work right now. At least doesn't work well for the Aspyr ports. So it's like, all right, what couldn't you handle? What could you handle? And I want to know who's greenlighting the projects and damaging both the Star Wars brand, the Aspyr, and the Aspyr brand, because you're not helping anybody.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a shame, too, because I feel like Saber is one of the few who, overall, I think most of their port work that they've done has been met with pretty good reception. Like there's obviously like some stuff that like, oh, okay, well, we're looking at Witcher 3 on the Switch and it's bad. It's like really, really bad. But
I thought you said Witcher 3 was good with Saber.
No, I mean, I'm saying that the fact that they got it to run at all is amazing.
I see.
And you're going to be looking at a very ugly version of The Witcher, but you can still play through it. Mm-hmm. And the fact that that is a thing is still amazing. But I never in my entire life expected that Witcher 3 would actually run on the Switch. So the fact that it does is just testament to, in my opinion, Saber Interactive's talent as far as like what they've been able to do. But it does not look pretty. It is very mushy. Whereas I look at Aspyr and I'm like, I have no more faith in this studio. I think Mythforce was the last thing that I was like, oh, this looks cool. It's like a Saturday morning cartoon. And I think it was pretty decent. But we got the recent Tomb Raider 1, 2, and 3 remaster, which a lot of people really like how much better that looks. Mm-hmm. But you can tell that they just kind of went through and like glossed up all the imagery, all the textures and stuff like that. They redid a lot of the model work and stuff like that because they didn't think about why certain things look the way they do in the game. So things like keys got a really cool new upgrade on what they look like. You can't see those against the background. So it's like the thing that made the key very vibrant and stand out is now like impossible to actually like identify and know unless you know exactly where that key is supposed to be because you've played the originals for so long. So I should we just kind of get into the story about Star Wars Battlefront?
Yeah, that's good. I mean, $35 bundle, and they didn't do much to them. And the Xbox ports were just as good, if not better. But then the idea that they put it out with tons of infrastructure errors and tons of different server errors. So they had, like, what was it, 9,000 people trying to get into a multiplayer server that could hold 200 or something akin to that. And that's a huge issue. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's beyond me to think that, like, how did you not know? It's Star Wars and it's Battlefront. Like, you should have been aware.
It kind of makes me wonder if they were hoping that this would have been like a Helldivers situation where they planned for like a small amount of people. Mm-hmm. They completely underestimated the amount of people that would probably buy into it. And they just don't have the time to be able to spin up more servers to be able to accommodate the influx of players.
Mm-hmm. Could be. Did you see their response?
Oh, yeah. So developer Aspyr Media has responded to the backlash. And this is coming to us from an article from Windows Central again. So thank you to them for writing this up and following up with them. But basically, this is Aspyr saying that the critical errors with our network infrastructure led to ongoing server issues, and that it will continue working, or that they will continue working on to improve it until stability or stabilized to prevent future outages and stuff. I can't believe that they would kind of do this. Even if you only had like 200 people for servers, I would at least anticipate that you're going to get in the thousands sales for something like Battlefront Collection. Like this, these were lauded games. Like these are the reason why I was interested in picking up an Xbox back in the day, outside of just like Gears and Halo. It was like the Star Wars Battlefront games looked really fun and I wanted to jump into them. So the fact that they're doing this is just kind of nuts. But the Classic Collection is a bundle. It was updated versions of the 2004's Battlefront and 2005's Battlefront 2. This launched late on March 13th. It's available for $35 on Xbox Series X and S, Xbox One, PC, PS4, PS5, and Nintendo Switch. The collection has had a ton of different issues with it, so I would hold off personally if you're planning on jumping into this, and just kind of wait and see like how it pans out. Because if it's one thing that I've seen, like for example, was it Rockstar put out the GTA trilogy,
right?
And that was another really botched port of their games, and they really didn't pay attention to like the reasons why a lot of the stuff looked the way it did. And it was to mask a lot of the limitations that the hardware had. So when you clean that up, the game looks really bad. It doesn't have nearly as much of the atmosphere as it does. Now, since then, that GTA trilogy has actually been cleaned up really well, and they've had a really good, good representation of it, kind of looking the way it should have when it at launch. But I guarantee you, you know, like people are going to remember how that launched and that state, and that's what's going to stick out in their mind.
It took so long. And they're not
going to go buy it. Yeah, it took too long. Yeah. Absolutely too long for them to fix it.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just thinking like if I think this is going to be the issue with Battlefront, is people remembering like it was cool, but you know, can't play it now. It was a nostalgia hit, but it's not worth it to invest the 35. But what were you going to say?
Well, I was going to say, like, we have Aspyr dropping the ball in the Battlefront Collection. It took too long for Halo Infinite to get right, which it's finally in a good spot. Multiverses is coming back now after its weird launch, not launch. Suicide Squad hasn't had an update or patch in the last 2 weeks, and it's supposed to do season one March 28th, but... like, what does that mean for that game that has effectively lost its user base? Like, so many poor launches are really damning a number of these studios for any number of reasons. And it feels like so many of them are rushing to make a fiscal date and then wondering why they're not profitable. And it's really frustrating.
It's almost like games are hard and studios are not given enough time to be able to get these games to a state that is acceptable. And if I'm being perfectly blunt about this, I do very much believe like the, you know, vote with your wallet mentality. This is one of those cases where a lot of devs are like, I, you know, we need gamers to be buying games at full price. It's like, well, we need full games at launch to justify the full price. Mm-hmm. So, If you're going to be putting out a game like this, which is a terrible representation, we've seen really good remakes last year, like remakes that just stood out, like Resident Evil 3 remake, or not 3, 4 remake, 4. Absolutely astounding. Dead Space remake, absolutely astounding. Metroid Prime remake, absolutely astounding. Like really stand out remakes from companies who care very much about the legacy of that game. And then you look at like these ones and you're just like, yeah, these are just like, you know, it's like seeing a mobile game come to the Switch. You're like, oh, that there. Okay. All right. Well, yeah, that's in the store. Okay. Cool. I think I'll pass on that. It would be nice if it had some love.
It's such poor timing for so many studios. And like, go back to the diversity, equity, inclusion, sweet baby stuff. It feels like people are frustrated with the state of their games and they need a scapegoat anger point. And it's causing more riff and grift between the developers and the players at a time where the industry almost can't afford it. How many people are saying that we are in the midst of a gaming crash with a number of layoffs and such? And
yeah,
many of them are right. Like, people do need to buy more games, spend more money on games, but people don't have that money. And when they do spend their hard-earned money, it hurts worse when the game doesn't produce, doesn't provide. And so I think that's a consistent kind of butting heads that's taking place. And voting with your wallet is the only solution. And we have long since known that the people making the game are the people and aren't the ones, they're the ones that are going to suffer, despite the decision makers not suffering. But that is kind of a frustratingly real aspect of capitalism, and that's kind of the way the cookie crumbles sometimes.
Yeah, and sometimes that cookie is the rich, and you have to eat the rich.
Oh, I see what you did. Okay, all right, clever, clever.
Sometimes I wonder if we're getting closer and closer to a point where AAA games are far fewer, and we don't have as many big studios producing these really big games, which is kind of when they'll make like those tentpole games that we used to have, kind of like, you know, every Nintendo console back in the day, they had like one or two like Mario or Zelda games. Mm-hmm. And that was the console. That was the, that was the generation right there. You got one or two and that was it.
Is that why we're getting Aud and Hellblade size games versus, you know, Ghost of Tsushima style games? Like, I wonder. I don't know, but I do wonder.
Yeah, because I mean, I think like right now, I think indie is where a lot of the ingenuity and fresh feeling games comes from. I think a lot of like I can't remember the name of the game that just got announced for mobile, but that poker game that
the Baltero. I know what you're talking about. Bunch of Discord playing it.
Yeah, a bunch of folks playing it on Steam. It's one of the you know, biggest games to come out on Steam, and they just announced that they're going to be making a mobile version, which is probably perfect for that game because it's like a poker roguelite or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I haven't dove into it, but I think that something like that is, you know, what we're hoping to find more of in the gaming sphere. Like, a lot more indies are getting attention nowadays, and that's it's good because it's showing that, you know, indies are where the new ideas are happening, and that the kind of old stuff, the stuff that we're used to, is the stuff that the AAA is kind of leaning heavily on. We're not really seeing, and when we do see something fresh that's come out from like a AAA or AA studio, nobody buys it, and then later on people are like, oh man, I really love Titanfall 2. That was such an underrated game.
Yep, it happens too often. You know, I alluded to like the launches of Multiverses and Halo. Like, Multiverses just announced it's coming back, and it's coming back in, I think, I want to say May, after being gone in this weird beta time. But they could have you could have bought money in the first beta that they had, which wasn't really listed as a beta. And now it's on Unreal Engine 5, which is good. I'm really curious to see how Multiverses goes. In general, they're partnering with McDonald's. They're doing promotions. It's just a strange return to form. And you have to wonder, like, yo, WB, like, you don't get it, do you?
They don't. Oh, my God. Talk about WB not understanding what it is to be a gamer. They're doubling down on the idea that AAA live service games are where it's at. And that may actually be where the cash cow is. Like, I won't debate that, but I also think that is not where I think a lot of gamers want to be able to live all the time. Like, you may find one game that's a live service game, and that's like your game. That was my World of Warcraft. That's my Sea of Thieves. That was my Destiny for a while. But I still want to go out and have different experiences and stuff like that. Like, if I stuck to just one game, I can't imagine the number of games that I would have missed in the last 2 years, just because I wasn't open to new experiences and stuff. Like, I can't imagine never playing Immortals of Avia or Banishers, because those games are fantastic and they're fresh IPs. And like, to only be living in one game forever, mm-hmm. Will save you money, but it may not, because I guarantee you I've spent more money on Sea of Thieves than I have any other game ever.
Yeah. Well, you know, Sea of Thieves, PlayStation users are spending more money on that game than ever, apparently.
What?
That was a transition right there.
So are you suggesting that Sea of Thieves is selling well on PlayStation 5, but it's not out? So these have got to be pre-orders.
They are pre-orders at that. It's kind of teased into the top on and off top most pre-ordered game on PlayStation, which is indicative of Microsoft's proof of concept idea of bringing the game over. Pretty impressive, all things considered. Xbox is and PC are both getting this other version of Sea of, or like bundles of Sea of Thieves. I'll let you talk about that in a second, but like,
yeah,
it's funny to see Sea of Thieves doing so well. Hi-Fi Rush is already out and nobody seemed to notice.
Nobody wanted to talk about that. But I think that's because Hi-Fi Rush is like one of those known quantities. Mm. Like, you already kind of know what you're getting for it. So not a lot of people talking about that. There's not a lot of hype. Whereas a lot of people are like looking at Skull and Bones and being like, this ain't it, bro. Mm-hmm. This ain't it. Although I do think that Skull and Bones is still a really good game for what it is. I just think that a lot of people didn't want that. And I think it's suffering from the same thing of like, this isn't the present that I wanted on my birthday situation, kind of like how Suicide Squad was.
If they strip, that's a good analogy. Yep.
I got one. Got one good analogy today. But Sea of Thieves is topping pre-orders over on PlayStation 5. Shout out to all of my Sea of Thieves community friends out there. We will do whatever the it takes to get cosmetics. Whatever the it takes. It doesn't matter what it is.
Is there a story here? What are you referring to?
Oh, buddy. Buddy, do you want to know about the cookie conspiracies?
Tell me.
Sea of Thieves? Okay, so, first off, it started back in 2018 when mm-hmm. Chips Ahoy, a U.S.-based company, released cookies with codes on the bottom of the packaging for an Obsidian set that was very hard to come by, because the original cool-looking set for the game was the Black Sea Dog pre-order pack, mm-hmm. which we are not getting for the PS5 version. Mm-hmm. And people had to go out and hunt down these packages of Chips Ahoy cookies to try and get these codes, these Obsidian cookie codes for mm-hmm. their set. And I remember buying packs upon packs to get codes for my UK-based fans so that they could actually get these, because you couldn't get them outside the US. Mm-hmm. Fast forward to 2022, lo and behold, Oreo releases a custom Oreo set just in the UK and outside territories, not in the US. US-based mm-hmm. company releasing cookie sets outside the US. Can you believe it? So a lot of us had to go out and find friends, mm-hmm. quote unquote, in other territories where Oreos, specifically, I think Germany was the easiest one to find friends in, who could obtain these needed login codes to be able to get these cosmetics. See if these fans will do anything to get cosmetics, because that is all we have. There's no power progression in Sea of Thieves. Mm-hmm. So when they flaunt cosmetics in front of our face, mm-hmm. yes, we are asking each other, hey, do you know anyone that's got a PS5 that could log in for me on the beta? If I buy it through my account, like, I'll just give you my login information. You log into your PlayStation 5 and just, you know, get on a boat real quick so I can get access to those, because the cross progression is going to give me the cosmetics on my Xbox side. These pre-orders are Xbox fans, Luke.
Yeah, I was about to say, like, this sounds like a lot of Xbox fans are just jumping over to purchase in. How long before you think this game ends up as part of a PlayStation Plus tier?
Ooh.
Does it end up? Like, will PlayStation allow that? I mean, Look at the show. The show is in Game Pass day one, never in a PlayStation Plus tier for PlayStation because they hate their gamers. They're my best friend.
Guys.
Yeah, Phil Spencer's PlayStation Plus.
Come on. What is going on with PlayStation Plus? Just put your games in there, man. Like, what are you holding out for? What's the hope?
For the life of me, it consistently baffles me, and this is like kind of a bigger topic, but like Nintendo abuses their fans number one
all the time.
All the time. Yeah. If anyone is in doubt of that, like I don't know what realm you live in. PlayStation certainly hasn't been, they don't go out of their way to treat their consumers super well by comparison to Xbox. And yet Xbox stays in a resounding third place, which to me really speaks to the power of IP and just how much IP can resonate and a mismanaged IP can fail. Halo being the mismanaged IP, you know, between the shows, the movie, the launch of 5 and then Infinite, like consistently, IP is more powerful than how you're treated as a customer. And it's just wild to me. And I'm curious if anybody else notices that it occurs to me at least once a week.
Oh yeah. No, I 100% am of a mindset that Nintendo fans, I don't know if this is still actually like a debunked thing or not, but Stockholm syndrome comes to mind, where I feel like Nintendo fans have been abused for so long that they understand like they're in a bad relationship, but they just can't get out. They just feel like they can change Nintendo if they're nice enough and tolerant enough. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Nintendo, great IP, fantastic hardware designs, terrible customer relations or customer facing stuff. Like it's just, it's horrible for them. I feel so bad for them. I feel abused just by thinking about my Nintendo friends who are like, I can't wait for the next Pokemon, you know, and they're grinning through the pain. Mm-hmm. It's rough, man. And same thing with PlayStation users. PlayStation users are like in a drought of first party content, and they're like, nah, we still got the best system, rocking back in their chair. Like, guys, I love you, and I hope that your company treats you better with whatever new president comes in, because man, did they I can't say the phrase I want to say, but man, they messed things up over there. Really, I don't know if Sea of Thieves comes in to PS Plus at any point. I think Microsoft is going to continue to eat those purchases, because at the moment Sea of Thieves coming in at $40, which is exactly what I expected it to be, because that's what it's been at for Xbox for a very long time. Mm-hmm. Originally $60 game. The premium and I can't even think of what the
deluxe,
there's like
maybe?
Two deluxe. Yeah, I think there's like a premium and a deluxe. Don't ask which one's the better one, because you know those words are worthless. Those two versions have DLC, or not DLC, but like Emporium content and in-game content to justify the cost if you don't already have those cosmetics. So if you want some fresh stuff going into the PlayStation version, those are good ways to do that. They have stated that those bundles will be made available at some point separately for Xbox users. So if you want to upgrade your version to like a premium or deluxe version, they've said that that is something that should be coming as well too. But it is really cool to see, because I think even like with the top tier, which again, premium or deluxe, you tell me, which one do you think is the better one?
No idea.
Exactly. Whatever the top one is got a season or a bundle pass or a, no, what is it? A plunder pass, token for season 12. Mm-hmm. So going into that, if you get the highest version, you're already going to have the plunder pass for, or the season pass for Sea of Thieves for season 12. Mm-hmm. The game, it's interesting right now to kind of get into like how people are reacting to it, especially because it just got easy anti-cheat added, along with their game developer kit upgrade. A lot of people,
Halo too.
I know,
the easy anti-cheat.
Yeah, very surprising to see. Like, hey, you know, maybe easy anti-cheat, not so terrible. I know that there are things that can prevent your game from launching if you have easy anti-cheat on a game that you want to play, but I'm going to call the morality of your decisions as a PC player to maybe take a look at what kind of programs are on your computer. And maybe that's why Easy Anti-Cheat doesn't want you opening the game.
Interesting. So,
but yeah,
in short, I'm anxious to see how PlayStation users respond to Sea of Thieves, how PlayStation users entering that ecosystem changes Sea of Thieves. I think that'll be really interesting to watch too. It's the future that we live in that we're going to see these games in multiple places. I do wonder what that does for each of these audiences. I mean, PlayStation themselves, it was leaked, what, a couple days ago that they're going to see a new refresh of their PS4 Pro, PS5 Pro, yes. I'm sorry. If
supposedly,
if those leaks are believed, one, that cosmetically that system looks way better than what I think is a pretty atrocious visual design. Like, I do not like the design of the PS5. I don't like its UI. I like almost nothing about the PS5 except for the incredible games I get to play. Which is strange, right? Like, obviously that we're on an Xbox podcast, so people might interpret that to be fanboyism, and I hope not, because I certainly put in a lot of time into Helldivers, certainly have Platinum Spider-Man, certainly have put a ton of time into a number of games that they make, because they do good stuff. But I don't like the physical design. But I'm curious if the bringing in of a PS5 Pro changes the Xbox ecosystem and some of the games that Xbox makes that run in multiple places. Like, how does the arrival of a PS5 Pro change a game like Sea of Thieves, which is this really cool art style and really beautiful, but like it's transitioning to, is it transitioning to Unreal 5? Is that what's happening? Or are they just doing back end stuff? No,
the GDK is just giving them access to developer tools that are more current than what was available back in like 2015, 2016.
I see.
So for PC users, it'll be a big boon because we'll get access to like DirectX 12 versus DirectX 11, which is better for newer video cards to get more bang for your buck. If you're one of the adopters of the like the 40 series NVIDIA cards and stuff. But a lot of that is just kind of like back end stuff that's going to let them be able to deliver smaller patch updates to the game as opposed to like the larger ones that we had. Although they have been like, they've been eating their shoe on the fact that they said that we needed to have one last large download for the GDK update. And it turned out to be like a full reinstall for Windows and Xbox users. Mm-hmm. And then just this week, they said, hey, it's going to happen again. Sorry. And we've had to reinstall Sea of Thieves like twice at this point. So there's definitely been some issues over on that side, but I genuinely hope that, and I actually plan on doing like a full episode just for PlayStation 5 users to get them like an idea of like what to expect with Sea of Thieves. But rest assured, Rare is treating this like a fresh launch of a game. They are banking heavily on it. They want to make sure that this launch goes well because they understand how important it is to the future of their game. Because this could, for all intents and purposes, be the difference between 3 more years of development or 6 more years of development. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it's just going to come down to how well it does on PlayStation.
I hope it does do well. I am never rooting against a game because of what platform it's on. Doesn't make sense.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people are going to be seeing this in the future. Like,
yeah,
boss games and stuff.
Look, and I alluded to the Halo Infinite update. I'm excited for this one because this new update is going to have so many features. We saw a networking overhaul test a few months back, and it was really good. Like, it really cleaned up, made it more of a modern feel. Sometimes Halo feels old in its just the net feel of it. But that new test felt really good, and I'm anxious to see what happens. They're bringing in new modes, anti-cheat, custom firefight, which I'm really looking forward to because firefight is a great mode that has staled. It didn't evolve since it came out, and I'm really excited to see that. I feel like anybody that has never played Infinite gets a great game to arrive to. And if you've been along for the ride, all the things have felt incremental. But it's kind of like, it's a really great game. Like, it's just a really great game. And it stinks that it launched
in such a state. But now here we are 3 years later and it's like, oh, this is really good. But I think a lot of people made up their minds already.
See, I feel like I'm a Halo fan, but I've got other games that I enjoy playing more currently because I think, I don't know, there's something about Halo multiplayer that I'm just not jiving with. I think it's the time to kill, and I think it's the speed of the game. Mm-hmm. I kind of like stuff a little bit faster, so I think Halo is just a little too slow for me. Mm-hmm. But I fully recognize that that's a me problem. Mm-hmm. But when Infinite launched, like, the campaign was amazing. The multiplayer was amazing. The thing that brought Halo Infinite down was the seasonal progression, which I called out like early during the flights as something that I was like, okay, the UI sucks. And the way that they're designing this battle pass system is going to fail. Like, it's just not fun to do these challenges. It detracts from the point of the game, which is the objectives. Mm-hmm. And to see them go 2 years with trying to like find its footing and understand like what they want to do with this. And seeing the Master Chief Collection team come into the studio and kind of take the helm, I think, of like Infinite's multiplayer, you can take a look at the free content that they're putting out and be like, dang, you know, they're putting a lot out for people. And they're not asking for like additional fees or anything like that. There's obviously stuff in the store. But seeing things like this, where they're addressing core functionality of the game to ensure that the longevity of it launch like stays in a positive state, and to see like the HGC kind of ramp up this week, and see like, you know, they're doing Twitch drops for it and stuff, so you can get some new cosmetics for your Spartan and vehicles. Seeing the new maps. Seeing them adopt Epic's easy anti-cheat, which is a kernel running anti-cheat, which, again, I stand by. You don't need kernel level anti-cheat, but when you don't have a team dedicated to just anti-cheat and pulling like bot data and trying to build an anti-cheat that does not require kernel level access to the game.
What is kernel level?
So imagine someone saying like, okay, well, we need to I'm trying to think of a good way to do it. Basically, like, the kernel of the level is like the integrity of the files that make the game. You can run a program on top of the game that kind of like skims for cheaters and bans them. Or you can have a program like Easy Anti-Cheat where it will check the files to see if there's anything that's changing that. So, you remember Game Genies back in the day?
Yeah, yeah.
And Game Genies were effectively changing the kernel level of the games to give you infinite lives, you know, super gotcha. High jump, things like that. Mm-hmm. That's what Game Genie was kind of doing. That's kind of what a lot of hackers use nowadays, is stuff that just changes the game at its like core functional level. Mm-hmm. And Easy Anti-Cheat is one that kind of just keeps an eye and scans that on a regular basis to ensure that no changes have been made to the base of the code.
I see. Okay. That makes sense.
Which I recognize can be intensive for computers. Like, if you have an older system, Easy Anti-Cheat may be causing a slowdown from time to time or lock up your game. And it's not a perfect system, but it's definitely a out of the box, ready to go program that you can have on your game that will ensure that the number of people that are going to be impacted by issues with running Easy Anti-Cheat are far fewer than the people that are going to be impacted by cheaters.
Gotcha.
I think that is an acceptable margin of error.
Gotcha. Okay. All right.
But yeah, looking forward to this. If you decide to jump back into the custom firefight matches, I'd be curious to check that out and see what's going on with that.
I'm excited too. And the show season 2 has got me jumping back into Halo from time to time. I really liked season 2. I haven't watched the last episode, but for all the losses that season 1 gave, 2 is not bad at all.
So that's good. I just re-upped my, was it Paramount? Mm-hmm. So I'm going to be sitting down and digging into that, in the coming week.
Gotcha. Well, everything without Quan Ha is pretty good. So
that's good. It's a shame that character is terribly written.
It's a shame that character exists in Halo. So bad. So bad. No apologies. It's a terrible character.
There could have been cooler characters for sure. Yeah. Yep. Looking forward, though, I am curious to see like what would happen with like a season three. Like, will they go season three?
I hope so, because I'm liking season two. I think season three, if you can get the budget, because they're alluding to something pretty big. And so I want people to watch season two. Do not watch season one, because the direction they're going means that three could be pretty dope. So
can they just delete season one and say that season two is the start?
They should. They should.
Luke hates season one. That's all we need to worry about. Right. You know what I'm kind of curious about?
What?
We've talked in the past about games like Anthem. Mm-hmm. Everyone, you know, kind of loving what Anthem did to an extent. Like, I think Anthem still has a ton of flaws, and I still think that game was badly made, but there were definitely some things from that game that I think were really cool. I'm kind of looking at this next game, Outcast, Beginnings, and getting a bit of Anthem feel for it.
Yeah, no, I saw Outcast came out. I don't even know where to look to request codes for that one. But it's out. Outcast is a game that like it was kind of pioneered third person open world games way back in the day. It had two remasters at various points, and now this is an entirely new game. It's an actual sequel that launched to pretty good reviews. Open Critic at 69, Meta at 70. IGN gave it a 7. Shack News gave it an 8. Xbox Era only 5.5 out of 10. So I'm really curious. This looks like it lives in the AA space. But I really like the videos that I'm seeing of like the flying and the flying around this open world. I think that's where you're getting the Anthem vibe from. This is a game that I'm going to check out eventually. I think we've got another or a big game on our plate that I'm looking forward to and checking out right now. That is going to take a bit of time to go through, but Outcast is one that I'm anxious to check out. Like if we had gotten a code, I would have been like, yep, this is definitely one. Cause I'm really interested in it. But I'll probably check that one out when it goes on sale, because it just looks cool. And that flight looks dope. I do want to play it.
Yeah, so this one's coming out from Appeal Studios. Not the greatest track record, but it's being published by THQ Nordic. The game looks like it's kind of it feels kind of like, you know, a little bit like a budget Avatar.
Yeah, double A. It's pure double A.
Yeah. But yeah, you get a character or Cuddy. Cutter.
Cutter.
Oh my gosh. I'm blanking on his name. I'm going to find it real quick.
Just Cutter sounds cool.
Well, just Slade. But he's Cutter Slade.
Cutter Slade.
Yeah, it's a very 90s name. And so the premise of it is that Cutter Slade has been like resurrected. He's been brought back to find that the world that he knew, you know, 25 years ago or however long ago, is now completely stripped of all of its like life and resources. And a lot of that was probably his fault because of the people that came in after him. So very Avatar-like in that sense. But it's up to you to kind of like help free the indigenous people and kind of restore balance to the planet. This game has a jetpack and it has like a wingsuit. And it looks like it is just one of those fun third person open adventure games that you would expect out of like a Ubisoft, but made by a company that actually kind of created the franchise. So it's not just like one of those like, we're just making a mishmash of stuff and seeing if people like it. It's like, no, actually this is like a legit game. And it's like a legit take on, you know, what would happen if someone realized that they were kind of like the reason why this planet had been enslaved and strip mined, and what are you going to do about it? So the original was back in 1999. I think I saw it, like the original is like $2 or $3 on Steam right now. It's on sale. And this one's like a $60 game. So still kind of like in that budget territory compared to the $70 games that we're getting now, but it looks interesting. And it's just over the shoulder, third person action, open world adventure game where you go around shooting things. And I don't see how people could go wrong with that.
If anyone listening picks this up, please drop a comment or on YouTube or let us know on socials or in Discord, because this looks like a game that I wouldn't spend full price on, but I would definitely dive in on sale.
Yeah.
Because kind of to go back to our conversation about like how far our dollar travels and like what games we're able to spend and like if it's worth either the price. But I thought it was cool to see this game come back, particularly after Power World and Helldivers live in that AA space and they're doing so successful. So I hope Outcast does well.
I'll be honest, if this was a $40 game, I'd probably jump in a lot sooner.
Same. That's exactly what I'm thinking too.
You know, I think that we've got a pretty good wrap on this, but we did get some listener questions. I would be lying if I didn't address these, because I mentioned it in the opening that I definitely did not botch. So Edward Varnell writes in and says, what makes Xbox appealing to you? And you can't say Game Pass. LOL. How do you celebrate it as great console/brand for video games? Would you ever do an episode to celebrate and just be positive about it? This is an easy one for me. But I can vamp for you if you want to give some thought on this, or do you have an answer ready to go?
I have a couple answers. I bet they are similar. There's a lot you can celebrate about Xbox as just a brand and console and gaming space. They've done a ton for game preservation and backward compatibility. They had an entire program to bring games from the very beginning of its lifespan come forward, and the pricing on that was wonderful. They also had programs in place to improve a number of those older titles, FPS boost being a good example of that, the HDR that comes to back compat. So many older titles are so easily played on Xbox from the first and second generations that if I'm on PlayStation or Nintendo, I'm envious of. I think that's really great. I think the controller is bar none the best controller in gaming right now. I think the DualSense is pretty good, but I don't think it's up there on the same level as the Xbox controller. I think if we're still being positive aesthetically, both the S and X are pretty great. The S is super affordable and lets you get in on a wonderful level. And cloud gaming opens up the doors for a number of different ways to play in multiple places. They're continuously partnering with PC makers, with Steam. They're letting their games be accessed by more and more people. I think Xbox has a lot that you can say they do very well that both PlayStation and Nintendo should explore. And we're already seeing both of them do just that. Outside of Game Pass, those are my answers.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm right there with you. I think there's a lot to really celebrate about this console. I think the fact that there's simple things that I take for granted on a regular basis, cloud save access. Being able to go from one console to another and quickly pick up a game that I have on quick resume from the state that I have it in on the other console. Absolutely amazing. I think that that's something that, you know, in a mindset of where a company looks at it and says, we want to sell you more than just one console. We want to sell you a couple consoles. And that way you can have your consoles in multiple rooms. Means a lot to me. I think that's why a lot of folks are interested in the PS Portal, is because they only have one PlayStation and that PlayStation is stuck in one room and you don't always get access to that one room. So the really nice TV with the PlayStation that you have is completely worthless if your kids want to sit down and watch Blue's Clues, or not Blue's Clues. What's the one? Bluey?
Bluey, I think that's the one. Is it
Bluey? All right. Bluey. I know kids' shows. They're watching they're watching YouTube videos on Roblox. There we go.
Nerds.
But, I think things like that are things that I take for granted on a regular basis that I would say is appealing to me. Xbox does something with their games that I don't see too many companies do. And that's, the Buy Anywhere program. That's
Play anywhere. Play anywhere.
Or play anywhere. Yep. Essentially, yeah, you can. Yeah, you can buy it anywhere. But yeah, yeah. Play anywhere is a marketing term that they use to grant multiple copies across different platforms within their ecosystem. So when I bought Sea of Thieves on PC, I didn't have to buy it on Xbox. I didn't have to worry about that. Like when I went to Destiny and I had to buy Destiny in multiple places, and then I had to buy the expansions in multiple places, I was like, this is dumb. I much like the play anywhere mentality of I buy it, I'm using the same account, just let me play it. Mm-hmm. Because that's something that as a consumer, I want to have more access to my content, especially if I'm paying a premium for it, because it's a luxury. I want to be able to play that where I want to be or where I can play that so that I don't have to think about it. So that's one of the things. I would say that Xbox has standardized what the controller for video games is. Mm-hmm. You know, we see a lot of people talk about the pros and cons of Xbox versus PlayStation controllers. Nobody really mentions the Switch Pro controller, but shout out to that thing still being a beast. It has a 3DS battery pack in it, and that battery pack lasts you a couple of years on one charge. So I don't know how, but it's fantastic. But they have kind of standardized what the game controller looks like right now. And I think that there's still growth to be had, especially after playing with the Turtle Beach Elite, which is why I like where third parties are going with some of this stuff. But you can't deny that when you think of a controller, there's generally two shapes that you're looking at. And one is the symmetrical stick design, and one is the asymmetrical stick design. And I think the asymmetrical stick design is the one that kind of wins out just based on looking at what Nintendo's doing. So I think there's lots to do. I don't know if it would ever warrant like a full episode, because I feel like we kind of celebrate Xbox every week in a small way. So I don't know that it would necessarily require like a, let's do a deep dive into the ecosystem to warrant it.
Agreed. I agree.
Let's see. Let's get this last one and get out of here. This one comes up into us from Todd Oxtra, who wrote in, says, when Xbox has an event, do you think Xbox should focus on games that aren't exclusive or games not on Game Pass? Or do you think that just those are just marketing deals, or do they just want to make sure people know they're on Xbox as well?
Ooh, this is one that frustrates me, because I know there's logic in both. When it's a developer direct, I don't mind. I want to see, partner preview. Obviously, it's all third party. I love seeing that. I don't think you need to focus on games that are just on Game Pass. I think Game Pass will need a mega hit for it to kind of take that next step, and it just hasn't happened, won't happen. I feel like we've really leveled off at, I think it's what, 35 million, which to me is still incredible. I saw a really interesting chart a few days ago about Xbox profits, and they've only gone up, or rather I should say the scatter plot diagram, it's trending upwards still. Since 2014, I want to say they've been slowly trending upward in terms of their like revenue or profits. But having those partner showcases really does help them build relationships with developers, and we've seen them chasing Japan quite a bit. But having non-exclusive or non-Game Pass games in there is kind of that catch 22. You're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. What do you think?
I think that Xbox needs to focus on games that are exclusive, whether they're in Game Pass or not, because I think that the thing that is going to sell the console that will then get the Game Pass subscriber is those exclusives, is those really big titles. I think that if people have a game that is of a quality that would stand toe to toe against some of the top end, you know, pedigree of games that come out on PlayStation, that you would actually warrant the console sales. And I think the console is predominantly the biggest place where Game Pass is purchased through. And if that's the case, then the only way to really see Game Pass grow is to have those big titles not only come to Game Pass, because then people are going to say like, oh, well, I just need Game Pass and a console. But you need something that's actually warranting the sale of the console, in my opinion.
Good answer. I'm with you.
I'm trying to think if there was other parts of that I wanted to address. I do think that the events themselves are all marketing. I think it's all marketing. I think the way that Xbox has kind of segregated their first party stuff with the more kind of grassroots movement of the developer dive or deep dives that they do, the directs, like at the beginning of the year, I think that that's a good way to kind of humanize a lot of the content that they're putting out as a marketing product. Whereas like the partner preview is going to do the thing that you don't want in your main show, which is showcase a lot of the third party AA indie stuff, that more people are just like, oh man, the show really slowed down when X and X got announced and they just kind of lingered on these bunch of titles for a while that I don't really care about because I'm just here for the big shows. And, you know, having that kind of segregated away from the main show, it's a bit of a disservice, but it also gives it the breath, the room to breathe that it needs to be able to like give time to some of those games. There's definitely some games that came out at this most recent one that made me think like, oh, those are actually kind of interesting titles. I will give those a check because I probably would not have remembered or cared as much if they were in a main Xbox show.
Agreed.
All right, Luke. I think that's it for an episode. I think I think both of us are trying to kind of like, we're trying to figure out like what we're going to be talking about for next week. Hopefully there's some interesting stuff coming out. I think both of us are just kind of, there's a couple things coming out next week that'd be worth talking about. I think both of us right now are just absolutely heads down in games right now. So we haven't really thought too much about like the state of the industry, which is nice. It's kind of nice to actually just sit back and play some games for once.
To not be angry at everything.
Yeah, to not constantly be thinking like, oh gosh, what company is you know, getting rid of their entire studio right now? Mm-hmm. So.
Yep, agreed. We've had a good time just playing games, which if anyone's down and frustrated lately, just play. Just play.
Yeah, just play. Very much so. All right, buddy. If you guys have any questions, concerns, comments, again, definitely feel free to reach out to those. Definitely make sure to check out the interview for the Tales of Kinzan.
Kinzera.
Or Kinzera. Mm-hmm. Messing up everything today.
It's almost like you just woke up early for us.
Well, it's most definitely the taking the lead on the show that I was like, I could definitely do that. But hopefully you guys are suffering through this with grace and give me some leeway on this. Luke will be back to top notch form for next week's episode, right, Luke? Yeah. He's got a lot to talk about and I don't have access to it, so it's gonna be a lot on you. No, it's fine. I'm not slighted upset in the slightest because I know that what I wanted was not what we were going to be able to get. So I'm totally now good with that.
Now I want to know.
I'll tell you afterwards.
Okay. All right.
But anyway, that's going to do it for this episode. So thanks everyone for listening. Be sure to, if you get a chance, it's stupid and I hate doing this, but if you're able to support us just by clicking the like button, sharing the episode, letting us know what you think. I really love to get that honest feedback from the populace with these kind of things, because so often than not, you feel like just kind of like you're sharing your opinions and you're not really being fed ideas or thoughts from other people. And I think that that's really important for growth. And I'd love to hear some feelings and thoughts from people in the comments.
That's going to be it for us. Have a great rest of your week.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye.